Hey, everybody, I am your host, Eric Mueller, and welcome back to The Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Before we get started, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you're enjoying the company of family, food, and football today. I'm eagerly awaiting a Thanksgiving dinner with family, and I'm crossing my fingers for a Minnesota Vikings win tonight. Now, on to the episode. Chris Walsh, one of America's foremost cannabis industry analysts, joins the show today to offer insight into all things cannabis. Have you ever wondered how far away we are from federal legalization? Just how big is this cannabis industry, and how fast is it growing compared to other industries? Also, what are the biggest growth areas that I should invest in? Are you interested in starting your own cannabis business? Chris will share his advice on how to be successful as a cannabis entrepreneur. Chris served as the founding editor of Marijuana Business Daily during the company's launch in 2011, becoming the first journalist in the United States to focus exclusively on covering the business of cannabis. As CEO of MJ Biz, he now guides the strategic vision of the company while educating mainstream industries about the marijuana and hemp sectors. He's also the host of the podcast Seed to CEO. Chris has been quoted as one of America's foremost cannabis industry analysts by dozens of media outlets, including Harvard Business Review, NPR, CNBC, and the New York Times. He also earned an MBA in international business from Regis University. If you're considering an MBA program, I think you'll love what Chris has to say in this episode. I hope you enjoy today's episode and know that I am incredibly thankful for your support of this podcast. Happy Thanksgiving. Let's head on over to the interview. All right, welcome back to the Eric Mueller Show, the podcast where we explore what makes any successful person's inner clock tick. Today, I'm joined by Chris Walsh, CEO of the top name in marijuana business news, MJ Biz Daily. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on, man. This is exciting. You're the first cannabis expert, per se. And Chris, before we dive into your expertise on all things cannabis, we want to know what makes up your success portfolio. So if you're new to the show, let me give you a little background real quick. An investment portfolio is basically a compilation of investments, lays the foundation for financial goals. So here on the Eric Mueller Show, we want to discover how successful people like Chris invest in themselves to build the foundation for their success. So Chris, start us off. What are some skills or traits, habits, mindsets that make up what we'd call your success portfolio?
Well, I think it comes down to a few things that I've learned along the way, and I didn't always think of it in these ways, but this is what I've learned. I mean, I'm in my mid-40s now, and have been a journalist in the background, in previous days, and then helping start and grow a business in the cannabis industry. And one of the main things is really being able to adapt and reinvent yourself, especially in the cannabis industry. It moves very, very quickly and is very unpredictable. But in general, I've seen a lot of people I used to work with, friends, former colleagues, and just people in general, acquaintances that are afraid to change. They're afraid to learn new skills. They want kind of a steady career and job and don't like going outside their comfort zone. And I totally get that. I was like that for a while. But I think to be successful, and how I believe I've been successful in general, is really looking at my skill set and trying to enhance it wherever I can, and looking at doing things differently. And it might be different than how you learned in college or how you started your career and how you became successful, maybe over a 5 or 10 year period. The ingredients change over time. And especially in this world and in this day and age when everything is changing so quickly, you got to reinvent yourself. And that leads to my next point, which is really taking calculated risks. And I look back to my own experience, and I could have stayed, as a reporter and editor at newspapers, but I saw what was going on in that industry, and I went back to school to get my MBA, and I figured, I need to expand my skill sets. And then I started with this company, and it was way outside anything I thought I'd be doing. And a lot of people raised their eyebrows going into the cannabis industry in 2011. So I took a calculated risk along the way that paid off big time. I moved to South Korea before that. Got outside my comfort zone growing up and working mainly in Denver. So success, I think, is taking these risks as well. And that leads me to my other point, which is really accepting and learning from failure. And so you hear a lot of successful executives and entrepreneurs talk about failing fast or the benefits that come along with failure, but it takes a while to learn that. It took me a while to learn that too, that failure isn't a bad thing. It actually is very key to you becoming successful because everyone is going to fail in some way. And so it's how you respond. It's how you react. And if you can accept that it's going to happen and you're not focused on, oh, woe is me and beating yourself up, and you're focused on, okay, what am I going to take from this? What can I learn from this that's going to help me down the road? That is in my, as you call it, success portfolio. And I think that's been critical as well.
Yeah. And Chris, honestly, I'm a big Gary Vee fan, and I was listening to one of his recent episodes today, and he basically said something very similar to what you just said about failure in terms of expecting it to happen as an entrepreneur, and that being an advantage to know, hey, you're not going to be surprised if you have 15 different things going on, 12 of them might fail, but you're not going to let that phase you. You're going to focus on those other three that worked and hammer that. So I think that is a super, you know, impactful point for everyone to listen to again if you missed that. And Chris, did you notice, like, throughout your career, so when you jumped on board with MJ Biz Daily as a founding editor back in 2011, and now you're the CEO, did you notice your definition of success change at all during that span of time?
Yeah, I guess it's still kind of changing. It's, you know, I kind of view it from a long-term perspective. You know, there's small successes, and they can even be big too, but they're short term. It might be a product or a project or a promotion or whatever you're defining success in on a more narrow view. You know, over time, the big question is, what is success? And to me, you know, it's overall where I'm at these days is it was different back then. Success might have been, you know, making sure I have a stable career and staying in journalism because that industry was collapsing. And then it might be, hey, seeing if I can flex some business skills and help start up this cannabis publication, media, and event company, and we'll see how it goes. But, you know, I took a risk, and if it falls short, hey, that's a success. I tried something different, right? So it's changed over the years. And you know, as CEO now and looking back on everything, I think really it's about identifying what's most important to you in life and always moving towards that goalpost. And it can be small moves, baby steps, or it could be large ones along the way. It's likely a mix of both. And everyone's going to define it differently. It could be financial, you know, it could be I want to make a certain amount of money. It could be, you know, a career path. It could be your family, it could be yourself. But in the business world, I really think it's about identifying what you want out of a career and out of life on the work front, and then working towards that over time. And honestly, I think, you know, this is, you talked about the inner clock. Right. And for me, it's really, how I would define it now is what drives me is being able to have choices and options and not be stuck in a job, in a position, a certain company, a certain industry, living paycheck to paycheck. It's, I think everything's been building towards how can I open as many doors as possible so that I have options and I have flexibility and that I never feel stuck in life, especially in a career. And so that's what keeps me moving forward all the time. And again, when you look at the definition of success, that's what I've identified as important. And that's what I'm always trying to move to, whether it was getting my MBA, whether it was taking a risk and moving to South Korea, as I did years ago, whether it was jumping into the cannabis industry. All of that has been, you know, centered around this bigger thing that drives me, which is choices and options.
Right. And I loved how you spoke about pre-interview about like the importance of that higher education and that MBA being so essential to your, you know, continued learning to be able to think differently. And so if we have someone listening that kind of wants to dabble in entrepreneurship, maybe they're not quite there yet. Are there any courses or books, anything that you've found, you know, not necessarily specific to cannabis even, but it certainly could be, but any resources that you'd recommend that someone that wants to get into entrepreneurship check out?
Honestly, it's the school of hard knocks, right? So you don't know what it's like until you go through there, till you help grow a company, till you lead a company. So there's the real learning experience is going to be there. But for me, you know, I've always been amazed at the natural entrepreneurs that just have something in them. You know, maybe they were they were selling candy at school with an 80% markup in you know, elementary school. And then they were selling tie-dye shirts. And then they started a business in college. Like, there's some people who just get it. There's some people who don't have an MBA and they just start their own companies and they learn it. For me, with my background in journalism, I was taught to think a certain way, and it wasn't the business way. As a true journalist, you're thinking about other things and you're trained and you're in it for different reasons. You're not in it for money. You're not in it to grow a product or an offering. You're in there to write and to help people understand developments, et cetera. So for me, it was a very different transition than for some people, because it's hard to make that jump from thinking like a journalist to thinking like a business person. So the MBA was really beneficial for me because it changed how I thought about things, and it gave me that foundation to whatever I did. It happened to be in the cannabis business, and it fell right into my lap in terms of being able to use my MBA. But no matter what I'm doing, I have that foundation to grow on. And I don't think I would have accomplished nearly as much as if I hadn't gotten the MBA. In terms of overall resources, honestly, I think what's both inspiring and what's also really useful is just reading. It can be an article or it can be books about successful people. And you'll learn some of the things. You know, there is almost always a period in the early days of a company that it almost fails. Even the most successful people, Elon Musk at Tesla, you know, you can name, go off the list, Bill Gates. There were always periods where they didn't even know if they were going to make it. They were probably heavily in debt. Like, they were maxing out their credit cards, cashing their 401ks. Maybe they didn't even have a 401k. And you learn that it's a tough grind, but, you know, people are not successful right off the bat. You don't just open your doors or start a company and, you know, all of a sudden you're on the cover of Forbes. There's a lot of trials and tribulations. So I think by reading just about successful executives or listening to podcasts or whatever it is, you know, you can learn a lot.
Yeah, I think just kind of goes back to that continued learning piece and just keeping it in your mind that your struggle is not, you know, it's not unique to you. If you're in entrepreneurship, people have been through crazier things. You know, yeah, I love that you mentioned like Bill Gates, Elon Musk, people that are obviously very highly looked up to now that went through a lot of struggles early on and probably had a lot of ideas that we don't even know about that didn't make it off the drawing board. So Chris, for you too, so being in the cannabis business now, at least as a, you know, pretty much a novice in terms of what I know about it, but it seems to be growing like crazy in recent years. CBD, I'm in pharmacy as a practicing pharmacist, so we see some of that on the retail side. But can you give us a point of reference comparing it to other growing industries within the United States? Like, where is the cannabis industry? How big is it?
Well, the cannabis, we've done market research since the, you know, second year we started trying to get our arms around this industry. It had no data back then. States didn't track anything. It was on the fringes. No one really took it seriously. So we've been doing this for a decade. And, you know, according to our estimates, this is, you know, $27 to $30 billion industry. That's in retail sales. In the states where it's legal, that's not the underground illicit market. That's in these dispensaries that you see in states that have legalized, or the recreational marijuana stores where it's legal for adults, you know, for any use. And so, you know, that's with a B, $27 to $30 billion. When we first started tracking this industry, you know, it was about at a billion and a half. So that's a lot of growth over a decade. Oh, and so it's one of the fastest growing. It's been one of the fastest growing industries, but it's harder to keep doing that when you get, you know, 27, 28 billion. You know, you can't post 100% growth every year anymore. But, you know, in comparison, that's, you know, it's catching the craft beer industry. It's way over the NFL. It's over Viagra sales. You know, it's a major industry in the U.S. And what a lot of people don't realize, too, is that it's also becoming an international industry. You know, Canada has legalized marijuana for adults recreationally. It's federally legal. It's not in the U.S. still. And about over two dozen countries have legalized medical cannabis. Germany's moving forward with legalizing recreational marijuana. This is becoming a global industry. I don't think a lot of people think it's just in the U.S. or it's, you know, just primarily in kind of California and Colorado and those weird Western states. But, you know, it's all over the country now. You've got, 39 states that have legalized medical in the U.S. and you've got 19 that have legalized recreational. And then you've got, you know, over two dozen countries that have legalized at the federal level. So it's seen tremendous growth. There's a lot of growth ahead, but it's also experiencing growing pains. And in some cases, as the market matures, there's new challenges for the companies that they haven't experienced yet because it's still a new industry.
And how far off from federal legalization in the U.S. do you think we are?
That's the big question. You know, been talking about this for many years. We run a big trade show called MJ BizCon. We get 35,000 business people, and I do predictions at this every year. I give a kind of state of the industry speech, and making predictions in this industry is foolish because it will prove you wrong every time. But I think in 2017 or 18, I did for the first time predict that we would see some type of federal reform in the next year, and it didn't happen. So now I'm gun shy. But yeah. The big question, it's a big question. You know, the gears of you know, Congress move very slowly. It's divisive. And so, you know, when are we going to get marijuana legalization? It's probably not going to happen like that. If anything, there'll be a fix to some of the industry's biggest problems, like banking. I won't go into the details, but there's some huge issues that it faces because it's technically federally illegal. So I think it's going to be a fix to the banking and normalize that situation, which will kind of create a pseudo legalization environment where you're going to have the big mainstream companies coming in. You're going to have more mainstream investors, and you're going to have a lot more mainstream professionals and entrepreneurs come in as well. And that could happen later this year. I think the chances are very, very slim. There's bills in Congress. I'm looking at that as, you know, another year or two maybe, and a wider reform where there are, again, bills out there that can be voted on to legalize marijuana. It's not going to happen soon. There's too many conflicting views about it and how it should be done.
Yeah, fair enough. I think, like, for me, it's more of, at least from the mainstream topics you read on, you know, blurbs or Reddit or something, it's more a matter of, you know, not if, but when it will be federally legalized. Like, I think it's going to happen at some point. But maybe a question that we can answer is, let's say it does get legalized, would you expect, and we're looking at, like, from small business entrepreneur CBD, do we expect big pharma and, like, mainstream businesses to then take over if it does get legalized federally?
Yeah, I mean, we've been looking at that a lot too over the years, and if federal legalization would be, if anything, it would be changing, removing marijuana from the list of Schedule I drugs and allowing states to chart their own path with cannabis. It wouldn't just be like it's legal across the entire country. I'm sure that every state would be able to decide, and like it has already, but that would be kind of codified into law. Mm-hmm. So you'd have holdout states that wouldn't legalize. But in general, you'd have a climate that would open the door to kind of big insert industry here, like big tobacco, big agriculture, big pharma, big tech. You know, the list goes on and on. CPG, all of those companies, some of them are already getting involved, from pharma to tobacco to alcohol. And because it's federally illegal, they're on the sidelines in many cases, but they see this as a path forward, a growth industry for them. And a lot of these other industries kind of are stagnating or don't have any exciting new growth areas. So, you know, pharma, there's different thoughts on how this would work and whether pharma, how much control pharma would have. And it's really hard to say. I know pharma, again, is already getting involved. It's getting involved in other countries where their medical marijuana programs already resemble more of a pharmaceutical scheme than kind of it developed here more as a capitalism, really didn't have a lot to do with the medical side. So yeah, I do. I think pharmaceutical companies will come in, but they're not going to just dominate, especially the THC side, and turn it into some medical product. I mean, that ship has sailed. It's legal recreationally in a lot of states already. On the CBD side, you know, there's clinical studies, there's companies funding this. There's also psychedelics, which is a whole nother conversation that pharma is getting involved in as laws change there. But what the role of pharma is, we don't know. I'm sure that they are going to be and already are eyeing it very closely though.
Yeah. And looking at, so if someone's listening, it doesn't sound all doom and gloom if you're looking to start your own cannabis business. And if someone was interested in doing that, or someone that's just looking to maybe invest in the industry and possibly, you know, be an angel investor for someone that they know that has an idea, is there some advice that you might offer them? Like, what are some biggest growth areas, or what is maybe an underserved, a niche market within the cannabis industry that you've seen?
Well, one of the top pieces of advice would be you have to do your research. And I know that sounds kind of cliche, and you kind of got to do that in any investment or any startup company, but it's triply true with cannabis. It's a very different kind of industry. It has unique challenges that exist nowhere else. You know, you can get your social media accounts shut down. You know, if you're a dispensary, if you're a retailer, if you're a grower, if you're making products, that doesn't happen to other businesses. You can lose all your followers overnight in your main marketing method. You know, you've got banking issues where you can't take common tax deductions. So you have to understand the industry. And if you're an investor too, you do as well, because the company you're investing in is dealing with these challenges. So first of all, you got to spend some time researching this and figuring out how it works. That's the key, because every state is so different. They've all legalized in different ways. They have different terminology, different guidelines, different regulations. Some have licensing caps, some don't. That changes the market dynamics. And so you can't really look to a sector of the industry and paint it with a broad brush and say, hey, if you invest or start an infused products company, you know, making marijuana cookies and gummy bears and lollipops, like that's a hot part of the industry. It depends what state you're in. It depends on the maturity of the market, depends on the regulations. And in some markets, that's a great business. And in other markets, it's not. And that holds true kind of across the spectrum. The other thing I'd encourage people to do, though, is to look at what we call the ancillary side of the industry. And that's basically the vendors, the suppliers of equipment, of lighting for cannabis cultivation facilities, of technology, point of sale systems for the retailers, like you name it, anything a traditional industry needs, cannabis needs too. And the supply chain is agriculture, you know, it's cultivation, it's processing the plant into oils and then turning it into different types of products. So there's a CPG element, there's a product element, and then selling it at the retail level. And along that supply chain, there's tons of equipment and services that the companies need. So a lot of people, when they look at cannabis, say, oh, I'm going to invest or start a cannabis grow operation or a storefront. Those are the most difficult parts of the business. If you look at the whole ecosystem, which is billions of dollars in sales annually as well, you can look for the companies that serve the industry, and then they don't have the same challenges. So I broaden your kind of research to include that side too, which a lot of people overlook.
Yeah, and it got me thinking, and some of you listening maybe are thinking the same thing. So Chris, you are the CEO of MJ Biz Daily, mjbizdaily.com, and I'll tag that in the show notes. Check that out, please. But what challenges have you noticed during your time? So you've been with them for over a decade. Is there a big challenge that just sticks out in your mind as far as something you've experienced that might help someone who is a potential entrepreneur trying to get into this space?
Well, I mean, we've seen it, the countless challenges businesses face that we cover in our news site, MJ Biz Daily, the businesses that exhibit at our event, the speakers, all of that. We see that all the time, the many challenges. What we've experienced, we don't touch the plant. Our trade show does not have marijuana on it, on the floor. You know, it's a lot of the vendors and suppliers. And so we're one of these ancillary companies I mentioned, but we have still faced issues. We faced, especially in the early days, but it's still an issue today with banking. You can't go to traditional banks in many cases, especially if you're touching the plant, but also if you're not touching it and you're just tied to cannabis. You know, the Wells Fargos of the world often won't help you. They won't do a business bank account. So we've had to jump banks over the years. We have great relationships now with several banks. We were just acquired by a bigger mainstream publicly traded company, and they were able to navigate that situation with their banks, even though they bought, you know, a cannabis ancillary company. But that's been a huge issue. So that's what I mean about the fundamentals of running a business in this industry are different. You don't normally have to worry about getting a business bank account in any other industry.
No.
You know, you can't get SBA loans. You know, funding is completely different. When you sell, you know, when you're trying to sell a small company, you know, the buyer, you know, how are they going to arrange financing? It's just a different ballgame. So we've seen all the problems. We've experienced them ourselves. We've had our social media shut down temporarily and then put back up. We can't figure out why. Again, we don't touch the plant. We don't promote sales of it. So those are the unique things that you see and that we've experienced as well. So what that means is, again, you have to understand the potential pitfalls, the differences from other industries, and then you have to bake in a certain amount of a lot of uncertainty, and things can come down the pipeline unexpectedly. And so, you know, you need to have an appetite, whether you're starting up a company or you're investing in one, for risk and for fluctuations and for uncertainty.
Yeah, gosh, lots of really unknown risks within the industry that I really hadn't even thought about until you started talking about them. I'm sure people listening feel the same way. So definitely heed Chris's advice and do your research if you're trying to get into this space. I mean, opening a business bank account, not being able to do that, like that's just, that's like the first, probably one of the first five easy checklist steps that someone can do if they're trying to start a company. So
exactly.
Yeah, that is crazy, Chris. And so you are also the Seed to CEO podcast host. You host a podcast that you talk to pros in this industry and they reveal some stories behind their success. Is there a crazy story that you've heard from someone that maybe helped you learn how to, you know, possibly mitigate a future problem, if that makes sense?
You know, I talk to a lot of people, a lot of founders and CEOs, fellow CEOs that run plant touching companies. And, you know, a lot of what's come out, we basically chat, we go over their stories and what made them successful and where their failures were, just as you do on this show. Ours is focused on cannabis, though.
Right.
And I just think there's no one piece of advice or anecdote that stands out, because as what you find is a lot of what I've been saying that I experienced myself and that I'm communicating now, is there's just some trend lines in this industry of, you know, people, you know, the uncertainty, the need to adapt and reinvent yourself, the need for flexibility. So there's lots of anecdotes around people learning that along the way in the industry, and then baking that into their own success portfolios as well. And one of my favorite stories, though, was Jim Belushi from, you know, he's his brother was a famous actor. I think everyone knows Belushi.
Right.
And you know, he's also in movies and TV shows, but he got into cannabis, and he actually, you find a lot of celebrities getting involved in cannabis, and, you know, Snoop Dogg's and rappers and Seth Rogen and all those types of people. But what made him different is that he actually started a cannabis grow facility in Oregon, and he was actually out there. He's actually out there running it like as a farmer. He, you know, chasing gophers out of his outdoor cannabis grow. And it's a legit licensed business. And one of the things, you know, he did is he told the story of when he left the heat lamps over the marijuana on overnight, because he was having staffing issues, and his staff, you know, were checking out early, these growers that know all about cannabis. And so he's like, oh, whatever, they're going home, I'll take care of whatever needs to be done. And then he just locked up the facility and left. And so he came back the next morning and everything was burned.
Oh, man.
And this was like his big first crop of this strain, this cannabis strain that he was basing the company on. And, you know, it was one of his failures that he hadn't learned from. So that was just a fun one, because, I mean, can you imagine in any industry putting all this time into your initial product, and then something as simple as overnight, you've destroyed it.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure, you know, those listening can probably think of an example in their own life. I can certainly think of a few in mine where you make that mistake once and you're like, well, at least I made it, because now I know to never do that again.
Exactly.
So don't leave the heat lamps on, in other words, if you're in that type of business. But Chris, another thing that might be interesting to hear you answer is if there are any myths about the industry that you want to debunk. Is there anything that mainstream media is pushing about cannabis that you just want to tell people this is not true?
Where do I begin? I would say, it's changed over time. In the early days, it was, look at this weird industry, you can't take these people seriously. You know, the Wall Street Journal would parachute in and do a random story every now and then about this, you know, with puns in the headline and just painting a really strange picture of the industry. Now it's gotten more serious and more focused. But I think the common misperception is that this is a path to overnight riches, and that everyone's making millions because they see the growth, they see the number of states. It's in the news a lot these days. And it's a long haul. It's a tough slog. You have to be absolutely dedicated to this industry. It can burn you out. It can turn you against it. It's just so different. And a lot of the companies, they're not 50% profit margins, and the owners aren't, you know, living on an island that they bought in the Caribbean. So I think that's a misconception, is it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of time, and because it's not federally legal, because every state is different with regulations, because it's still an evolving marketplace, because you can't deduct common business taxes if you touch the plant, or sell it at the retail level. All these reasons, you know, it can be hard to make a really good living out of it, or build a successful company that you then spin off and exit in some triumphant way. Now, that's not to say it's not happening. There's tons of success stories, and a lot of people have indeed created successful companies and are setting themselves up for huge success as mainstream companies and investors come in and look to gobble up who's already in there. And we've already seen some of that happen. But this myth that it's everyone in it is getting rich is definitely not true.
Yeah, no, that's great to debunk that. I don't know if it's just me, maybe someone else listening can shoot me an email or message me to tell me I'm not the only one thinking this way. But I kind of see a parallel between Web3, cryptos, and NFT with cannabis a little bit. And that might be just my narrow blinder viewpoint of that's kind of an interest of mine right now. Mm-hmm. But it seems like, you know, that's kind of a space as well, in which case, you know, going forward, there's going to be a lot of things that fizzle out. You know, there's a lot of frauds. There's a lot of different things that are just not, you know, it kind of goes back to your point, Chris, about just doing your due diligence and researching. If you're trying to invest in something, to really make sure you know what you're getting into, because the last thing you'd want is for it to be some type of rug pull or something, legal trouble happens, and then all of a sudden your investments poof, you know?
Well, we've seen it happen, and I can't tell you how many people I've known, friends, whatever, like they've felt the hype of the cannabis industry over the years. Maybe they're state legalized, maybe they're seeing it everywhere in the news, and you know, which stock should I invest in? Or, yeah, or man, I have some money, like this is a great opportunity, and it is if you know what you're doing. So like you said, with crypto or whatever, cannabis has suffered from a tremendous amount of hype. There have been charlatans in the past. There have been sketchy business practices. There are great people doing it right too. But, you know, along with all that hype and the way the industry has evolved, there's a lot of pitfalls and there's a lot of dangers. And again, that's, and dangers as in losing your money, you know, losing your business. And that's why I just keep going back to that cliched, you have to understand the industry. And that due diligence can be, you know, reading, you know, news like our site, MJ Biz Daily, or mainstream media, getting a handle on it. There's research reports out there. We do one called the Factbook, Marijuana Business Factbook, but there's lots of other options. And then there's also, you know, if you're really serious about it, it's really getting out and talking to the people doing it. So that's why we started a trade show. So I'm not pushing your listeners to come to ours, but I'm just saying, like, that's what we found is successful, is getting out there, whether it's through a trade show or anything else, where you're just talking to people and learning about the business that way. It's not good enough to just read. And going back to your earlier question, what's a great piece of advice? We did have a CEO on a couple months ago who basically, he came into a cannabis company at the executive level. He didn't start it as an entrepreneur, but he had been an executive at mainstream companies and then moved into a high executive position at a cannabis company. And he said no matter what he did beforehand, all the research and even all the conversations he had, nothing prepared him for the challenges in this industry. And he said, so a lot of it is just the trial by fire. But you have to start with that understanding of the industry, but then also know that once you get into it, you know, again, there's going to be surprises left and right. It's also fun and exciting and fast growth and sexy, you know. But I'm also trying to dispel these myths that it's this glamorous joyride to riches, and you just kind of sail into the sunset here in a short period of time.
Yeah, I think all great advice. And in closing here, Chris, if you had to have a call to action for the audience, what would you recommend they do as far as getting involved with you, reaching out to you? Would you recommend just going to the website, download, buying a report, listen to the podcast? What do you think is the easiest way to learn about what you're doing?
Yeah, I'd say go to MJ Biz Daily and mjbizdaily.com, or MJ Biz is our kind of umbrella site where it lists everything that we do. But, you know, the daily site is our news and analysis and data on the industry and links to our events and reports. And, you know, most of that stuff is free. You know, just to get a sense of what the issues are in the industry and somewhere to start. We hear all the time, and this is why we created the company, as a resource for entrepreneurs and investors. But we hear all the time, like when I first started looking at this industry, I saw you guys, and that's how I started learning about it. So again, that's a lot of that stuff is free. And I'd say just start getting your head around what this industry is, because it's fun, but it's complicated.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being a part of the podcast. Thanks for sharing your insight and expertise. Everything will be tagged to the show notes. So if you want to reach out to Chris, go on that website. Is email? Do you use social media? Is there a good way to get in contact with you?
I would just say, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn. Even though I focus a lot of my attention outwardly, I'm not the most social media savvy guy. I mean, I know I'm savvy with it, but I just don't use it a ton. But my email is good too, chris.walsh@mjbiz.com.
Perfect. Well, everybody head over to ericrmuller.com/Eric Mueller Show. Click to listen now. You'll be able to access this episode with all the show notes and all the additional resources, ways to get in contact with Chris and what his business is doing. And Chris Walsh, thank you so much, man, for being a part of the podcast. We really appreciate it.
Hey, that was fun. Thanks for having me on.